Welcome to Come and Reason with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Tim Jennings. Together we will reason through complex issues to find evidence-based answers that harmonize scripture, science, and our life experiences. I'm your Come and Reason host, Charles Mills. This program is sponsored by Come and Reason Ministries. Hello, everyone. So glad you've tuned in. Let's begin with a question. How many listening to my voice right now have never made a mistake, have never done anything wrong, have never sinned? And how many of us have never had people or outside forces make us feel totally worthless, of little value to this world? More to the point, how many of us have never concluded that even God couldn't possibly love the person we've become? Yes, I know, I can't raise my hand either. So what do we do when we feel that way? What do we do when our mind is filled with thoughts of sadness, guilt, and self-loathing? What do we do when we just know that even God is so disgusted with us that he wants no part in our lives? We're on our own. According to Dr. Jennings, we are out of order. And there is hope. On today's broadcast, we'll enjoy part one of chapter 10 of his book, Could It Be This Simple? A Biblical Model for Healing the Mind, read to us by the author himself. This chapter is entitled, appropriately enough, Restoring Order. Let's listen.
In her 20s, Jane was an attractive blonde with a slim build and blue eyes that seemed to emit a light of their own. She had grown up in a fairly typical middle-class home with two siblings, cat and dog, and both her parents at home. Although she had suffered no abuse, as the middle child, she often felt neglected. Regardless of her excellent grades, her model behavior, or her numerous awards at school, she concluded that she just wasn't good enough. Now in her early adult years, Jane struggled with chronic feelings of worthlessness. One of the most common problems facing many of my patients is that sense of worthlessness. To help us understand how to cope with powerful feelings, let's take this example and examine it in light of our understanding of God's hierarchy of the mind. The greatest mistake people make when dealing with difficult feelings is that of accepting them as true. When most people feel worthless, they allow the feelings to take control of their thoughts and then imagine themselves in humiliating and demoralizing situations. The thoughts begin to follow the influence of the feelings and a torrent of negative ideas rush through their mind. How could I be so stupid? You ugly good-for-nothing, what makes you think he would ever go out with you? You can't do anything right. Why bother? Such negative ideas reinforce the feelings of worthlessness, which, when nurtured, mature into a well-entrenched false belief. With this false belief firmly ingrained, the mind begins to filter experiences through it. Experiences that support the distorted self-image get replayed repeatedly, further strengthening the feeling and belief of worthlessness. Meanwhile, the mind discounts and rejects positive experiences that should refute the false belief. Jane was living in such self-imposed mental anguish. She felt trapped and didn't know how to find her way out. Christ said, "The truth will set you free," John 8:32. When my patients disclose that they feel worthless, I pose a few questions that lead them to confront the situation. Are you really worthless? Are you really worth absolute nothing? Regardless of the answer, I ask yet another question. How do you know? This raises the issue that applies to all feelings. How can you tell whether a feeling is telling the truth or not? Because feelings can lie, how can you determine whether they are accurate or not when they all seem so real? I raise such questions in an attempt to stimulate reason to become involved in this mental conflict. Because truth enters the mind through reason, it is essential to utilize approaches that will strengthen this mental faculty. Consider the situation. A person dressed in a dark suit and wearing dark glasses knocks on your door. When you open the door, he demands, "Let me in. I'm from the FBI. What would you do? Would you ask for identification, or would you simply allow him to enter? Why would you want identification? Because you want evidence to verify his claim. Exactly the same thing must happen when a feeling knocks on the door to your mind. Elevate the feeling to reason and conscience and ask for evidence to verify or refute its validity. Let's return to the feeling of worthlessness. What evidence do we have for such a conclusion? On the most fundamental level, the constituent chemicals of our body are worth approximately $25. Many people can sell their blood plasma for $30 each week. How much do people pay for your services at work? How much did you and others invest in your education? Such simple examples provide minor evidence that the feeling of worthlessness is not accurate. But the most powerful support of our worth comes when we ask, who is Jesus? The Son of God. How much is He worth? Everything. Priceless. Did He, or did He not, give His life for you? Yes, He did. This is evidence, not mere claims. Jesus didn't simply proclaim how much you're worth. He gave evidence. He sacrificed His life. Now your reason and conscience recognize the evidence demonstrating your great worth, but your feelings continue to inform you that you're worthless. And right in the middle, between the two, is the will. You have to decide, which will you choose to believe, the evidence or your feelings? It is imperative to recognize the importance of the will. Everything depends on the right action of the will because it is the part of the mind that chooses. Consider when Satan took Christ to the pinnacle of the temple. The devil tempted him to throw himself off from there. Satan could not push Christ off. Christ had to make the decision himself. The same thing applies to our own conflict with Satan. He can never force the will. Rather, we must choose to surrender ourselves to his suggestions. This is true even when the temptation comes from within. The book of James tells us that when we find ourselves tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when, by his own evil desire, he is dragged away and enticed. Then, after the desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. James 1:13-15. James here describes the power of the will. It is only after the internal desire is conceived that it becomes sinful, destructive. The conception of the desire occurs when the will chooses the desire, when the will says yes to it. It does not matter whether or not you actually carry out the action. If the will says yes, but you never perform the act, the mind is still damaged, the conscience bruised, and the reason clouded. Imagine that while you're standing at the grocery checkout, the cashier turns away to attend to something. As you look down and see the cash register door open, a thought runs through your mind, I could sure use the money. In a flash, you decide to reach out and grab a handful. But just as your arm responds to your brain's instructions, the cashier returns to her post, so you abruptly cancel your intention and take nothing. What happened in your mind? Because you made the choice to steal, you have nudged your character one degree toward that of a thief, even though your actions never completed the thought. It will be more difficult to resist such a temptation next time. If the process repeats itself long enough, one eventually loses the ability to discern the right from the wrong, the healthy from the unhealthy. Reason and conscience slowly get destroyed. Let's return to our discussion of worthlessness. Choosing to believe the evidence does not cause the sense of worthlessness to evaporate immediately. But it does allow Jane to deal with it from a position of confidence and strength. She can have certainty that she is worthwhile even when she may feel worthless at the moment, thus avoiding despondency and hopelessness. After recognizing her worth, she could then take the next step in evaluating where the inaccurate feeling of worthlessness originated. Motioning toward my office window, I pointed out the hills in the distance and asked her, if a flare burst off over those hills, and I asked you what is going on over there, what would you say? I don't know, she replied. I would have to go and look. Exactly. Feelings are like psychological flares. They go off and tell us something is happening in a certain direction, but we don't know what until we investigate. If a flare went off above the hills to the east of my office, while we wouldn't know the cause, we would know that it wasn't something to the west, south, or north. Whatever the problem, it was happening to the east. When a feeling of worthlessness enters someone's mind, they know, through a review of the evidence, that it is not a conclusion based on actual worthlessness. With great certainty, they realize the evidence reveals their true worth. They also recognize that whatever feeling is masquerading as worthlessness is coming, not from a source of positive feelings such as happiness, joy, elation, or romance, but from something negative and unpleasant. And this is where each individual begins to uncover their own unique issues that give rise to the sensation of worthlessness. Whether it is rejection from a boyfriend or girlfriend who just broke up with them, or from a sense of failure that accompanies divorce. Elevating feelings to reason and conscience for examination and investigation in light of the facts, evidence, and truth, and then choosing to follow that truth will always restore order and bring peace to the mind. The greatest battle is learning to value truth because it is true, not just because it feels true. In Jane's case, she discovered she was feeling worthless because she had never experienced that her parents valued her. She believed they were disappointed in her. Jane drew her conclusions from her estimation of her parents' opinion, not from reality itself. To help her recognize her situation, I asked her to imagine that I had presented her parents with a handful of diamonds worth more than $1 million. Surprised, her parents had glanced at the diamonds and exclaimed, "This is ridiculous! No one would give away diamonds. These are nothing but cut glass." So they threw the gemstones into the trash. With this scenario in Jane's mind, I posed this question. Simply because your parents thought the diamonds were worthless, does that make them worthless? When she said no, I looked at her and said, "You're the diamond. Your parents' opinion doesn't change your value." Then I proposed something else for her to consider. I asked her if a $100 bill that I handed her would have any value or worth. "Yes," she replied. "What if I crumpled it into a wad? Would it be worth any less?" She shook her head. "Suppose I threw it on the floor, stomped on it, and got mud on it. Would it be worth any less?" Again, she said no. Then I said, "That's you. It doesn't matter if you've been crumpled, stomped on, or gotten dirty in this life. Your worth hasn't changed." Feelings are extremely unreliable and will lead into destructive avenues if not first confirmed or rejected through a reasonable evaluation of the evidence.
My, what beautiful, meaningful words for us to hear in this chaotic world. I hope you were blessed by this reading by Dr. Jennings from chapter 10 of his book, Could It Be This Simple? A Biblical Model for Healing the Mind. But we're not done with that chapter just yet. We'll continue right where we ended on our next broadcast, when Dr. Jennings begins by addressing legitimate and illegitimate guilt. I invite you to tune in. I also invite you to spend some quality time at commonreason.com. Here you'll find many, many resources to help you discover God's place in your life and how a proper understanding of who He is and how He acts can actually change your world for the better. You'll find books, articles, blogs, sharing tracks, podcasts, television programs to enjoy, and you'll also learn that the Common Reason team loves to do something interesting. They love to give things away. So be prepared to be pleasantly surprised. That's all at commonreason.com. This program was sponsored by Common Reason Ministries. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, wishing you God's presence in your life. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for spending time with us today. To continue the journey, I urge you to visit comeandreason.com. Here you'll find many excellent resources to help you gain a deeper understanding of the God we all love and serve. That's at comeandreason.com. This is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, inviting you to join us the next time we come and reason together.